Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
We're back with myself, Carrie, Sebastian, and Tom. And it's good to see you guys. I'm excited to kick off another year. It was fun to start these little tech bite conversations last year. And I don't know, I feel like I've really enjoyed them. I hope you guys have really enjoyed them.
I did, yeah. I mean, there was some really interesting conversation that we've had last year on different tech subjects. I hope we can keep the momentum for this year. We need to follow the trends as well and make it relevant to Jack Morton, but let's see how we can keep this up.
Yeah, no, it's been great to discuss and you know, keep tabs across different offices too and make sure that we're all aligned on what the trends are. And we're doing pretty well with what we've tracked so far, but I think we're going to stick our necks out a little bit here and make some predictions, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, tis the season, right? Tis the season for all trends reports, for all predictions, for all futurists to make their big payday and to talk about what 2024 has in store for us. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the wrap-up episode, but how I always really enjoy these because they're usually very wrong. Well, at least the bold ones are wrong, you know? But let's chat about what we kind of see coming. Let's talk a little bit about kind of some of the general stuff that's going to be swirling around us that's going to probably be monopolizing a little time. Let's just touch on that. And then it'd be great for us to then talk about what are the trends that we're actually excited for more development on this year, and ones that we're probably going to be talking more about this year just amongst ourselves. I mean, let's just get it out of the way. If you're sick of hearing the term AI, get over it because it's not going
AI. It's going to be a tough year for you if you're already sick of that term.
I mean, come on, it's the term that applies. I mean, part of the problem that we all talk about a lot is that AI is a really big term that really encompasses, it's an entire species of technology, right? And there's so many different skills.
It's been embedded into so many different things. You know, so it's kind of hard to sort of like step away from it because there's always an element that sort of like uses it in the background. It's so versatile and it touches so many different aspects of like what we can do that that's why you hear it all the time.
And I think it's also been interesting in that, like you say, Carrie, it's kind of become its own species now where it's like a categorization or like a catch-all now, where it used to be split up into computer vision and machine learning and the natural language processing. And now everyone just wants to bucket it into AI, I think, because there's a lot of marketing dollars that go behind AI, the term AI specifically. And so people are trying to ride that wave a little bit. But it is, I think that is where it is coming out a lot this year because people are just trying to take a thing that they used to specify to make very specific type of computing and just make it AI now.
No, I think that's such a great point, Tom. And I mean, so as far as some of the things that we just know are going to be the general kind of headlines going around, I mean, this category of generative AI is really going to be front and center, especially in some of these conversations we see coming up. I mean, we won't touch on it too much here, but it is an election year. I'm sure deep fakes are going to be common in the Google searches. I'm sure copywriting is going to be common. I mean, what are some other things you guys feel like are just going to be everywhere?
I think we need to talk about the elections because there's two elections, right? The one in the US and the one possibly in the UK. And we've seen the collision that's happened, you know, with some actors abroad. But AI was not around back then. It was only deep fake. So now that you have the power of these big LLMs to be able to produce very realistic text that could actually impersonalize different people and also produce images that where you cannot tell whether it's a fake or whatnot, then when you combine the two of these, what impact is this going to have on these elections? So I think deepfake is now been taken to a different level with the newcomer of AI.
As we're recording, there's an election in Taiwan tomorrow. I think I heard like 70% of all the democracies in the world this year are having some form of election. You know, it'll be interesting to see how AI is utilized and weaponized, for lack of a better term, everywhere.
But you know, with the creation of this content, which is to impersonate or to create a split between population, you know, you can no longer rely on, you know, the truth. And I guess this notion of like copyright as well that is behind it, you know, you no longer know whether what you're reading is true and whether the authenticity of that document is real. But equally, you don't know if the source of this writing was infringed somehow by copyright as well.
Yeah.
Because all these LLMs have been fed with some sort of copy or what have you, or these Midjourney, or they have had millions of images uploaded to their system to be able to produce other images. And so when those things are producing new type of content, where do you sit? You know, can you use this content for, you know, in your own work? I don't think there's been a court case, I think last year in the US. The outcome of the court case was if you started from an image and you use AI to enhance it, you still have ownership of that image because it's like using Photoshop essentially. But if you start from an image that's been created completely from an AI tool such as Midjourney or DALL-E, then the ownership is not totally clear. Mm. And then when you look at some of the tools that we use for creating music at the moment, at Jack Morton, you have ownership of the song or the piece of music that's been created by the AI as long as you pay for your subscription. Beyond that, you lose ownership. So if you no longer pay for the subscription, you no longer have ownership. So I think there's different interesting models that are coming up.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be some interesting precedents that are kind of set and then that kind of push us in that way. You know, I think for brands specifically, the trust conversation is going to be paramount, right? Trust is going definitely. To continue to be a growing thing. For anybody who follows along with the Edelman Trust Barometer, you'll know it's one of my favorite studies that's done annually. And we have seen, you know, the growing trend of a lack of trust and a declining trust with governments, with media, with nonprofit organizations. But and businesses have become more of that source, but they have started to decline too. And so this idea of, yeah, you know, to your point, Steph, of how do we make sure that trust in the truth of what is being put out there is guaranteed and that it can be stamped as authenticity. And I think that that's one of the things that should become common. You know, I really, you know, just anecdotally, I won't use the word synthetic human. I'll say synthetic character, but like, I'm not going to pretend that something is something that it's not. Mm-hmm. And I think that distinction will continue to become really important.
Yeah, I agree. And if you look in the broader picture too, I think open source software is kind of riding that wave too, where again, open source people like to be able to look at the code that's running behind the software that they're using. So they know, is it running exactly what the program says it's doing, or is it also having a crypto coin miner running in the background or something that I don't know about. And I think it's being used to build some really interesting things. I think this is also on the back a little bit of AI, where people are starting to look at these AI tools and saying, well, I don't quite know where this data is coming from. I want a little more control over the model. I want a little more control over the training data. And so they're starting to learn how to run open source and what to do in order to take control of your data and your software a little bit more.
Mm, yeah. And if we start to look at, you know, some of the other areas, you know, probably still connected to that, but different. I mean, it feels like culturally, we are very much still in the post-pandemic swing, right? People are still kind of pushing, getting back to more localized activities. This idea of building a community, of building a network, has continued and not just, you know, it wasn't a passing phase. I mean, I love this. I was reading a report the other day that was talking about the low usage of dating apps in 2023. And, you know, you pair that with the declined use in social media. People do want to fuel those human connections. And that's, I think that that's a trend that we started to see in 2023 and that will kind of continue into 2024.
I guess it's good news for Jack Morton, right? If people spend less time on behind their screens and more time together, it's a good time. It's a good thing that we need
absolutely
brand experience, right?
That's right, Seb. Good for business. One of the things, I mean, Tom, you'll love this. We were, you know, having chats in the office. We were informed by some of our more youthful colleagues. Some of the big trends coming back are also the nostalgia for technology. You know, of course, I will admit to being that millennial who has a lot of vinyl, but apparently CDs, tapes are coming back into fashion.
No.
Wired headphones, I mean, come on.
Who wants to wait to skip to the next track? And also, you can never find the beginning of a song perfectly.
And you're just the physical space you need in order to keep all these things. Like, Carrie, you say you have a lot of vinyl. Where are you keeping all of this? It's a commitment.
It is. You know, it's maybe an unwise commitment as well with the rising costs of just space. Definitely the biggest medium.
I think people who want that, they haven't experienced it. Right. And as soon as they're going to get a flavor of it, they'd be like, oh, no way. I don't want to be dealing with this. I'm going back to my iPod.
Actually, yeah, right.
What am I saying? iPod? Spotify. Why do I want an iPod?
We've gone beyond it where even the dedicated music device that replaced CDs is now being replaced by something else. And now we're going back.
Exactly.
I think that nostalgia is strong. And I think it's that, you know, in the positive sense, it really connects to what we were talking about human experiences, about people wanting that sense and wanting a more physical touch, which is interesting, or kind of thinking about tactility. I mean, one of these areas, I know that we've started talking about this, especially because, you know, this might be a giveaway, but it's CES is going on right now. So all of us have been poring over kind of some of the tech that's coming out there and from our colleagues who are out in Vegas. But I think we're seeing also a really big stage of a shift in the way that we design our current kind of communication models, tactility with technology. I mean, what do you guys think?
Yeah, it's been interesting to see there have been so many devices these days that are physically, just the physical form of them are breaking the mold, are breaking kind of the things that we've become used to over the past 15 years. I mean, you look at a cell phone, we're used to it just being a touch screen, a single pane of glass on the front. And first those got smaller and then they got bigger and now they're just kind of all over the place.
Have you seen the new one that rolls? It's like a roll.
Yeah, the rolling one.
That's amazing.
I know, exactly.
Can you?
It's great.
That's going to be a nightmare for like breakpoints when you design a website. I mean, where is your breakpoint?
And to that point, there's devices now where they're saying, well, what if we don't have any screen to interact with? How do you design a web page for a device without a screen that you just interact solely with your voice and with the camera?
Oh my gosh, Tom, that's such just a good like question to pose. How do you interact? Like, how do you design a website that is meant to be interacted with by an AI component to, you know, communicate and translate that information to a user? That's kind of crazy.
This is going to be an accessibility nightmare. I mean, because.
Always practical, Seb.
No, well, the thing is, right? If you can speak, it's fine. You can communicate with your AI. Otherwise, you're going to need a keyboard. But if the phone is no longer around, you don't have a screen to interact with the keyboard with the AI. There's going to be some real challenges, like for people who have that certain disability. I think our things are progressing. Mm-hmm.
No, you're right, but also just different considerations being built into those things, Seb.
Yeah.
Right. I think you're right. We've kind of reached a new understanding and appreciation for accessibility, or at least we're trying to, and how those things are designed will be really interesting.
But the thing is, you know, we've been, the screen has been with us for a very long time. So we understand accessibility for the screen, right, quite very well. But, you know, if we're removing the screen and we're having like interfaces and sort of like spectacles, or you don't have a spectacle, maybe it's just your voice, or this will create massive issues for like a certain group of people.
Or great opportunities, Seb, as you know, as the optimist right. likes to say.
Or great opportunity, yeah.
I mean, those are some of, yeah, and these are some of the things that I think we're going to be ongoing talking about that we're going to be dealing with from other categories. I mean, as far as things that we're excited about, and I think these are topics that we currently already talk a lot about because of their practicality, but we're hoping to see a big jump in them. I mean, spatial computing is huge. And Seb, I know that this is the thing that powers most of the AR and MR things that we're looking at. You know, what do you see as kind of maybe some of the opportunities for spatial computing?
Well, I think this is it's going to be a new way of craft new storytelling, you know, going from micro to macro. But yeah, so the storytelling, I think, will change quite dramatically because we're going to be able to, you know, immerse the user quite deeply into some of the stories. And also, you're not going to be confined beyond the rectangle of a screen. Hopefully, any of your surrounding could be the canvas for an opportunity for content to appear on. And I think the big one that we're all waiting for is the Apple Vision Pro to be released. Let's hope possibly that breaks the mold for new devices to perform better. I think the X-Ray as well, which Damien tried at CES, I've seen a demo of him like weighing it on his face, and he said it was rather good. Could be an interesting pathway as well to explore.
The immersiveness part of it, I think, is so interesting to me because in this business, you know, if you are in a trade show, there's always the question of, well, how does our booth stand out, or how does our experience make the people just interact with our experience alone? And is there too loud of music from the booth next to us that's kind of clashing with the music that we're playing or the sound design that we're using? The immersiveness of the spatial computing is like, if you get someone to engage with it, you can own the whole environment. You know, they're only seeing exactly what you want them to see, which is interesting.
I guess the only downside is the group aspect. So unless you have somebody who can be within the same world as you, like a brand ambassador who can, you know, help you guide you through whatever you're seeing, then it's kind of like you don't really understand what they're looking at and how they interact with stuff and I guess what they're experiencing. So I guess again, that's a massive opportunity for us to be able to look at the storytelling and how we can help our clients navigate the landscape. I think we're quite well placed with this because we've had some success in creating VR experiences with, you know, for groups where you are being guided by somebody who knows the subject and you have multiple people experiencing the same thing at the same time. I see this as being used in the same way.
Yeah, it's all the storytelling, right? Where it, instead of needing a live BA to walk you through what you're seeing, you can create a BA as part of the experience that they're in.
Are you going to send AI assistant BA?
I wasn't quite going to go there because I was going to leave it. But yeah, I mean, you could have the AI, you could have a synthetic character, Carrie, to your point, where they're leading this experience as well. You're right. You don't quite see exactly how they're interacting with it unless you build into the experience what the tracking is in that too. But there is that loss of social connection, but there's more opportunity for storytelling too, which I think is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the other aspect is how you make the content personalized, and I think that's a big topic mm-hmm. that we always trying to bring back to the table as well. Is, you know, as you're experiencing this like spatial computing demo, you know, how can you also have the content that you're experiencing, not just like the same thing for everybody, but how can it be personalized to you? You know, maybe the use of data and, you know, I'm going to use the word again, AI.
Well, and I think that, you know, we've seen this rising trend. Personalization has been a growing demand for quite a few years, right? Mm-hmm. Because it was the promised payoff for, you know, why companies could keep your data and why they were able to use it, right? This has been the promise that it will be personalized to you, that it will be catered to you, that it will be curated for you. And that demand is starting to become stronger. You know, it's starting to become a much stronger expectation. And I was reading a report the other day that said 76% of people are disappointed in their experience. If, you know, when they know they should have personalization, they just don't see it kind of coming to fruition.
But do you think AI and it's the way it's kind of like catapulted to the forefront will help those big tech companies to grab your data because they want to sell you the AI dream?
Maybe, but I think it's more that it's going to make it, you know, easier to create personalized, you know, assets. As we know, because we work in the back end, yes, personalization is possible, but it is not simple and it is not clean cut. And it requires that companies make a quite a huge investment into very big, you know, experience management, you know, platforms and that manage customer experience and customer journeys. And those things, those platforms take a lot to run and they take a lot of manual driving. And so as generative AI makes content cheaper, it can make personalization kind of rise up in quality. And so that it does continue to become more prevalent. That's, I think, at least what we're seeing, right, is being sold. Whether that comes to fruition, you know, that I think that's all in connection with how it's used. And a lot of that is about the other devices it's used with as well. I know we've talked about wearables in 2023, but and I don't even want to use the term wearables because they're products, right? They're everyday products. But I think that this element, you know, again, in combination with the AI component, in combination with the personalization component, that we're going to see more shifts in this. You know, when we talked in 2023, you know, we were referencing elements like the Humane AI pin that was kind of really, you know, changing the dynamic there. And per our earlier comments about, you know, changing the way we engage with things, we're seeing even more of that come out of CES. I mean, this rabbit R1, I don't even know what to call it. They don't even really call it a thing. It's definitely a mobile communication device, but it is not a phone.
Yeah, they call it your personal companion, right? Or your computing companion.
Okay.
I know companion's in there somewhere.
That's nice.
Which is an interesting way to frame
it. Very non-threatening.
It is very non-threatening, very, it humanizes it quite a bit, right? But it is a cool approach, I think. And it's interesting that they built their own, and they call it, instead of a large language model, it's a large action model, an LAM, because its whole purpose is to actually carry out the things that you want to do. And it's, again, it's really breaking the mold of, we're so used to, in my head, I know we've discussed Uber, we've discussed things like that. In your head, you have to make the conscious decision of, I want to get X done, which is the correct app on my phone in order to get that done. And you have to make that decision and scroll through the pages of icons, where this is, no, you just ask your Rabbit R1 what you want, or tell your Rabbit R1 really what you want to get done, and it will figure those steps out for you and just do it for you.
I find it so scary. Do you want like this AI to have access to your bank accounts and being able to transfer money from one account to the other and expect, and basically it's...
Don't they do that already? I'm surprised that you're the one with the fear. Usually it's me.
Yeah, right.
Well, the thing is, when I transfer money, I do it myself because I want to know that the money has arrived and it's going to the right account. But money is one, you know, is one thing, you know, bank transactions, but that could be like, you know, dealing with healthcare, for instance. And do you trust your AI to, I don't know, order your pills or what have you? You know, you're going to have to, if you rely on this, it's basically you're handing out the keys of like perhaps merging your life and will have you to this entity, and you have no control over when, maybe perhaps switching it off, I don't know.
Right.
But it's kind of scary for me.
Yeah, I get it. And I hear that for sure. And it's some criticism I've heard about things like the Humane AI pin, where if you say, one of the demos that they gave is they held a book out in front of the pin and said that they, in a fantasy scenario, like found at the library or at a store, and they said, how much is this book? And the pin just said, oh, it's $18.99. Well, what store is selling it for $18.99? Is that the lowest price? It just like tells you this fact of this is how much it costs. And you are turning it over to your point sub of you're turning it over to the AI to decide where the right place to buy it from. What cost is the right cost to show it? It doesn't tell you like, and it will be here tomorrow. You have no idea what the shipping options are or anything like that. It's a really interesting thing that's less high stakes than your bank and your medical information, but it kind of shines a light on the veiled nature of this.
I don't know. I like to be in control. So
yeah, but you know, Seb, I completely agree, but I think we all know that security currently, our data security, our digital security does not meet the advanced nature of the information that we have available on that across the board, you know, and this happens all over the world. It happens a lot in the US, you know, where local governments are, you know, information is held for ransom, you know, by essentially hackers. And so I think that privacy, that security, that promise that of protection and also ramifications, when we see these companies lose all this data, there are no repercussions for them. There are no responsibilities that they are due to meet. And so I think those elements are also going to become like really big conversations because we all feel that way. It's fine. Sure. Book me a car, but like, don't pay my mortgage for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I think that there might be some gates, you know, that we need to put up. You know, if you feel like you trust the technology, maybe you can bring that gate down if you feel like it. But I think there's definitely some rules they need to put in place whereby, yeah, all this is free for you to use, but these, you know, do not touch, for instance.
And I mean, I think a lot of that also we're touching on as well with security and with storing information. I think that's also really connected to, you know, these new proprietary generative AI models that are popping up. What do I mean by that? I'm referring, this might not be the right term, but it's AI models that are running within an application. You know, Getty has introduced an AI tool. Microsoft has an incredibly comprehensive tool called Copilot, which works across its entire Office 365 suite. And all of those things, you know, especially something like Copilot, you know, it requires that you record meetings, every meeting, you know, it requires that you kind of store all of this stuff in order to process. But it's interesting to see that maybe these pop up everywhere on every website now.
Right. And on the flip side of that, what Getty's doing, I think, is very interesting in that their tool is only trained on imagery that is already in Getty's catalog. So to your point, Seb, about the copyright issues, that's their way of kind of getting around that. And it is very interesting that they had to build their own thing, their own proprietary generative AI, in order to have that control over what is training the model so that they can know whatever this AI outputs, we have the rights to every single thing, every single source that went into training this model. So by extension, you have the rights to use this generated asset as well, which I think is a really interesting approach.
I think this goes beyond just music. I think it's across all arts, all things that humans are really good at creatively.
Design,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, but people are also using these AIs to create web page designs for them.
So there's this new tool that we've been testing at Jack Morton called, it's called viscom.ai, and you upload your sketch and then it turns it into like almost a picture. So I wonder where the copyright sits here, because you have created the drawing in the first instance, and therefore you are the owner, you are the source, but it was augmented by the AI. So I guess you would retain ownership here, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think that to me feels akin to Photoshop a little bit, where you come up with the design and you can fill in. If you use the fill bucket to like fill an entire mm-hmm. area of your design with a color, and you didn't paint every one of those pixels, you're augmenting your idea and your design with the tool. It's similar to that yeah. to me.
Yeah. And I know we touched on that before in previous episodes of just that bit of like, you know, there's a very clear case here of the, you know, this help, this is a growth on what mm-hmm. we've done and other creative tools kind of in the past. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how different tools, how different platforms adopt these generative models for themselves and to customize them. You know, it's really exciting because I think it's going to spit out a lot of interesting stuff.
It is. I think what I'm interested in is seeing just the amount of content that is going to come out this in the next year, 2 years, 5 years. I mean, if AI is just creating content on the fly, hyper-personalized to the nth degree, there is going to be even more content to ingest and to try to take in if you want to engage with it.
Yeah, you're so right, Tom. And that's, you know, I think this came up at some points in 2023 as well, but I really think that we're entering into the era of curation. You know, we've had subtle bits of curation, obviously, in early stages, Pandora and Spotify and our Netflix watch list, you know, all of those things, yes, you could kind of deem as curated. But I think in this deeper level, with this exponential increase, we're going to see a change in the way, you know, in how influencers function. And I think influencers as curators, as kind of specialized curators, is going to become, you know, an ever-growing trend. Mm-hmm. And so you start to trust these personalities, right? These personalities and taste makers. You know, and that will be really interesting to see how that kind of affects the things that people like and the kind of mediums that they choose to engage with.
Yeah, it's an interesting model that it, you know, it will be interesting to see if a need for that human touch of the curation is what people end up looking for. You know, we kind of walk our way back a little bit where the AI is used to generate the content. There's certainly going to be AIs that can curate that content, but are people going to your point, Carrie, become these influencers because they say, no, it's been human curated. There's a little bit of a personality to it. There's a little bit of humanity to it. It'll be very interesting to see how that plays out.
So those are some of our big expectations for this year, right? I think we see a lot around kind of spatial computing and the way that changes, especially mixed reality content. I mean, I think personalization and the discussion, especially in connection with, you know, new devices, new formats of devices, is, you know, we'll continue to see some, we'll hopefully continue to see some new interesting elements in there. And that growth of generative AI becoming kind of proprietary, having specialized and custom models across more products, across more platforms, and, you know, maybe even websites. And how that will maybe even lead us towards this, I think, a needed era of curation. There's mm-hmm. a lot of stuff out there.
All right.
I mean, AI is going to have we're going to have a flow of AI in pretty much everything. I think that's pretty much a given.
Yeah.
That's
a safe bet. I'd take that bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe also we could maybe as in a future episode we could talk about perhaps what agencies are doing, not just Jack Morton, but also other agencies around the globe are doing and embracing maybe AI within their business as well. So it's not just touching consumers, but I see it's also touching upon, you know, places at work, which could be an interesting subject.
Absolutely. I think, you know, Seb, you're so right. In some of the coming episodes, some things that we can promise we're going to be kind of continuing to show some examples of the work that we're doing or discussing some of the examples that we're doing at Jack Morton. We're going to be talking a little bit more about developing these, you know, generative engagement platforms, more on that very soon. We're going to be talking about, you know, our development process and how we look at bringing these tools into our own business and into our own practices and the way that we develop work. And I think we're going to be talking about some of these new pieces that come out and really shake up these spaces. Maybe we can get our hands on some early generation tech. I know Seb's still trying for the Apple Vision Pro, so we'll go for it.
Soon.
Very soon, right around the corner.
Oh, budget was allocated.
Well, we have a lot of fun discussions ahead of us this year. And hopefully we might get to bring in some guests as well. So we'll look forward to doing that, chatting more, debating more, probably laughing more too.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.